This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect the UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. I'm your host, Michael Ayers, and today we'll be talking about what is right for college athletics, the lifestyle of college athletics, and the role of academics in sports. WRFL reporter Joseph Bledsoe has an example of one of the issues scholarship athletes face.
University of Kentucky, who are on full athletic scholarship, also receive about $1,000 in stipends per month to spend on rent, bills, food, or whatever they want. But former UK football player Ryan Timmons explains the system has flaws too.
Usually with athletics, if you're on a scholarship, you get paid every month, but you know that time can vary. You can get paid on the 20th or you can get paid on like the 4th, so you really have to budget your money. And sometimes, you know, if we get paid the first of the month and then a couple months down the road, we don't get paid to the end, you know, our money is kind of moved in different ways. So you have to budget and some things like that. But, you know, I don't think I was too broke, but there are some times where, you know, I had to like, all right, well, I can only eat this much a day. I can only buy this week because, you know, I have to save money for next week.
Student athletes practice their sport up to 20 hours per week, not including team meetings, extra workouts, and studying film. That, according to an NCAA survey, takes up an average of 32 hours per week, leaving little time for extracurricular activities or a job. I'm Joseph Bledsoe for WRFL.
We have two guests with us today, Dr. Steve Parker, who is the Associate Dean for the Undergraduate Advising and Student Success, and Associate Professor of Kinesiology and Sports Leadership, who received his education degree from University of Kentucky in 1995, and Dr. William Hoyt, who is a Chair Gatton Endowed Professor and Economic Expert who earned his PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 1986. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
It might be a surprise to some of our listeners to know not all student-athletes get a full-ride scholarship. According to the NCAA, full scholarship covers tuition and fees, room, board, and course-related books. Most student-athletes who receive athletic scholarships receive an amount covering a portion of these costs. According to the UK Athletics 2016-2017 annual report, UK Athletics operating revenue is $136.9 million. With 21 sports teams on campus, basketball and football are the two biggest sources of revenue for Kentucky Athletics. 12.9% of the $136.9 million annual revenue goes towards scholarships for student athletes. That comes out to a little under $18 million. According to Director of Strategic Communication Guy Ramsey, here at UK, there are about 500 student athletes, with 330 of them on some sort of scholarship. That means at least 150 student athletes are not receiving any compensation at all. Gentlemen, do those numbers surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me whatsoever. The amount of money in college sports, particularly that the universities, SEC, for instance, and other conferences profit share now. So the amount of money that is spent in college sport has increased. Now, that doesn't really equate into how much money that they actually get to keep. Over less than 20% of the universities, Division I schools are the Big Five, are into black. Most of them are into red.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not surprised by that. I might say that, and I think maybe we can come back to this later, that the black versus the red in terms of college athletics, I mean, you have to recall, keep in mind that these are not profit-making institutions, so their incentives to be in the black are going to be different than some kind of private company or, for example, a professional sporting team.
Dr. Hoyt, how is it fair that athletes are expected to perform at a high level academically and athletically without the reassurance that they can pay rent and bills on time?
Well, in my mind, I'm not sure that is fair. I wouldn't characterize it quite in terms of that. What I would characterize it in terms of payment that's comparable to what their contributions are to the revenue. And I mean, that's generally what we think in economics is some notion that you are paid according to what your contributions or your productivity is. And clearly, in that sense, and I think this is a sense that economists think of fairness, you know, college athletics are not meeting that.
Dr. Parker, do you think there is already an employer-employee type relationship that exists between these coaches and players?
In some ways it is, but other ways it's not. When you start thinking about it, if there was an employee relationship, and if you were deemed to be an employer, then the elephants in the room are Title IX and also workers' compensation. That's what you're dealing with right now. So that is why that the institutions have been very hesitant to actually think about paying athletes, because if you get an athlete hurt and they have like 20% disability, you're looking at workers' compensation, and also the catastrophic insurance keeps increasing. And so what happens, you could bankrupt pretty much a program pretty quickly.
And Dr. Parker, since you played D1 football, do you think that some people believe athletes receive a special treatment lifestyle that makes up for their hectic and busy lifestyle?
I think they do, particularly now with all the television. We didn't have that type of television when I was playing back in the 70s. They only see athletes that are performing and when things are good. They don't see the day-to-day activities that go on in terms of the number of hours they are during practice and all those type of things. So they don't see that. Regular students work too. But what we're talking about, we have a 20-hour rule in the NCAA, and we're having there's a lot of ways to get around that. So we have a lot of athletes who are actually, you know, spending more time than 20 hours, you know, working, and it's like almost like a full-time job. So it's not as glamorous as people think it is, particularly the amount of time that you have to spend, and then you don't have a social life that goes along with it. I'm a great believer in having balance, and when you have to practice all the time, and then you have to also go to class and do those type of things, you don't have very much of a balance when it comes to social life.
As the FBI continues its investigation involving college basketball, the question whether or not to pay student-athletes is largely up for debate. As UK's men's basketball coach John Calipari was asked about the idea at UK's Media Day last Thursday.
To pay student athletes is largely up for debate, and UK men's basketball coach John Calipari was asked about this idea at UK's Media Day last Thursday.
Be fair with every one of these kids. Be about them. I'm not saying don't protect the game. This is how I make a living. I'm not saying don't protect our university. I'm not saying that. But the first decision should be, all right, what's right for these kids and how do we deal with that? If we do that, and we all come together with that, being fair doesn't mean you treat every kid the same. They finally did away with this level playing field. Remember that one? We have 350 schools. There's no level playing field. That's just words. But let's be fair in that, and I think we'll move in a direction, because I will say this, we've had the highest graduation rate in NCAA basketball history of African-American basketball players.
The NCAA is working hard to try and fix its problems, but recent FBI investigations point to larger issues in college athletics. I'm Joseph Bledsoe reporting for WRFL.
Dr. Parker, how do you think universities in the NCAA are doing, or do you think they're doing a good job with college athletics?
No, I don't. The reason I'm saying they're not doing a very good job, because we have a pro model, but not a pro structure in terms of working with the athletes and working with people who deal with athletes, with agents, manufacturers of athletic apparel. We have professionalized college sports without it being a professional. So, no, it's very difficult to stay an amateur status. We saw that in the Olympics. The Olympics, committee finally went to said, well, we're just going to have to start paying these athletes because everybody is in the world. So, no, I would say not.
And Dr. Hoyt, how is it possible to regulate college athletics and treat every player fairly?
Well, of course, it depends what you mean by fairly. In I guess my view, and I think consistent with sort of what the economics profession would say, is sort of what I had said earlier. Fairly might be proportioned to what your value is in the free market, and. So, you know, an extreme point is, I mean, you would pay accordingly. I mean, if you compensate, it's not a question of, say, here's some level that you need for the players. Here's what they're worth for the college. That would be, my notion of doing that. Now, regulating, in some sense, I think probably it would mean less regulation. And, you know, one of the things that thinking about the FBI investigation, if you think about paying players, those kind of things disappear. If you make that legal, if you let the shoe company go ahead and contract with the players, you don't have those issues. It's when you don't have payment that these kind of illegal runarounds arise. So, I guess that's my feeling, is not maybe more regulation, but in some sense less regulation.
And I totally agree. And one of the things that I really think that could happen, we have a lot of one and dones, and the bottom line is I think that they should be paid, but not through the university. I think if a shoe company wants to pay an athlete, I think the money should be put in trust. And when they actually graduated or after 5 years or something like that, then they'll be able to get that money. The one and dones, I mean, that would be, for instance, a one-year turnaround for some shoe company, which they actually put that money in trust. The player gets the money when they get out. They have a contract. The universities cannot pay athletes. They don't have, first of all, they don't have the money to do that. And they're already using a lot of, University of Kentucky doesn't do it as much as other places that are smaller Division I schools, but they use student money and student service money to actually, to run their programs.
WRFL reporter Joey Bledsoe caught up with Chris Bollinger.
Chris Bollinger is a Gatton-endowed professor of economics and director of Center of Business and Economic Research, and can't relate to the busy life of a student athlete.
I can't imagine my employer telling me, well, yeah, in addition to your regular work, we also want you to be going and doing this thing, and it's like, well, what if I don't want to do that thing? So I think, many athletes are happy to be at college and are using the athletic scholarships to fund something that they want to do. And that's where I think the tension really comes here, is that those athletes, I don't want to destroy that opportunity for them. On the flip side, I think that there are a number of athletes that, we're just making go through hoops when what they really want is a career in basketball or a career in football. And that, that it really should be more focused on that career development rather than pretending that it's all about the academics.
According to NCAA surveys, about 75% of men's Division I basketball players believe it is somewhat likely they will turn pro, along with over half of Division II and 21% of Division III. Only 1.2% of college basketball players will be drafted by the NBA. I'm Joseph Bledsoe, reporting for WRFL.
And this is open floor, this next question. Is it fair to make young Americans work towards and do something they may not want to do?
Well, I'll take that. And I guess I would say, no, it's not fair. And maybe I would phrase it a different way. Again, in my role as an economist, maybe it's not efficient. I mean, it's not clear who's benefiting from that, if they are taking classes and what they really want, as my colleague Chris Bollinger says, what they really want to do and have a potential for is a professional career. And I might also add here the figures about the percent that think they are going to be pro, and of course, unreal expectations for most of them. But now the Division II, the Division III, they're way out of line, and they're never going to get paid. But you know, some of these Division I players that may play at Kentucky but don't make it in the pros, if you're paying them, then at least they are getting some return on their abilities and money that helps. And some of them are coming from very distressed backgrounds, and it may be very valuable to them. So I think that's a real value.
I think they ought to do away with the one and done. The reason why, and I think that causes a lot of issues. I think here at University of Kentucky, we've probably done a better job than most people would, the one and done. But the reason why I'm saying that, I don't think anybody should tell anyone that they cannot work and make money for a living, that they have to do something first and then be able to make a living. But I also agree, I like the baseball rule. The baseball rule, when you step foot in a classroom, you have to stay 3 years before you can actually turn pro. And I'm agreeing with that. I think if we want to do it for basketball, I think that's the way to go. I think if you want to go straight from high school, I think you should be able to do that. The thing that I'm really concerned about, and particularly for the socioeconomically disadvantaged student, if they do that and they don't make it, they are basically in worse shape than they've ever been. A lot of times they return back where they came from. And that's the sad part. And we're talking about, like I said, a socioeconomically disadvantaged group that a number of people in our family are depending on an 18-year-old to pull them out of poverty or something of that nature.
And why should all athletes be held to the same academic standards?
They should be held to the same academic standards as anybody who attends a university. The university should not be made a mockery of. In terms of it's a university, and if you're going to come here, I'm a great believer that academics and athletics can enhance one another if done properly. And we see this in other schools. We see this at Stanford, places like that Northwestern, that student athletes, you know, they are held to the same standard. And you know, a lot of places hold those student athletes to the same standard. Years ago, we had, student athletes were taking courses, remedial courses, and were in those remedial courses for 2 years and didn't have an hour toward graduation. And that's why we have the percentage rule in the NCAA now. You have to be have certain percentage of courses that you are passing each year, and there's a certain percentage you have to be a senior and all those type of things. So the bottom line is, if a person is socioeconomically disadvantaged and they don't get their degree, they really have put themselves right back where they started from.
And to speak a little bit more about those classes, do you think some athletes may take easier courses and majors that they may not enjoy just to fit their schedule?
Yes, I think they're in some instances, in some Division I schools, the athletes are forced into those situations because of practice time. I'm a believer that they should be allowed to, if they want to go to medical school and they want to go be in a chemistry lab during some parts of practice, they should be able to do that. One of the things that universities are doing, though, that I really like, they are allowing athletes to come in the summertime and take a lot of courses in the summertime. And I've seen a lot of good things. I've been around Bob Bradley here as an academic advisor and academic associate athletic director for academics, and they do a lot of good things over here. You know, I'm really tooting their horn because, you know, when I was playing, we didn't have those type of services that they have now. But they do a really good job in terms of about as good a job as anybody in the country.
And after you know, athletics and academics has been combined for so long, is it possible to even break them apart eventually?
Well, I guess I think the... I'm not sure if it's possible. I think that it might be valuable to do. I mean, to me, there are going to be some student athletes that want to be student athletes. There are some athletes here, I think, that are here primarily, and it makes entire sense to them. If you're going to be a number one draft choice, and the NBA doesn't let you go in, so it's to me, that's a collusive agreement that doesn't allow us to draft 18-year-olds out of high school. And it clearly makes sense for the NBA and the NCAA, but not the players, that, hey, wait a year, let's use colleges as our minor league program. I mean, if that's the case, why have these students or these athletes go to classes and, you know, I don't know what they're taking, you know, to be honest. They don't seem to be appearing over in business and economics too much anymore. I'm talking about the revenue generated. Well, I think we have a different mix than we've had in the past. But, of course, the ones, the non-revenue generating ones who aren't going to get a big salary out of it, you know, they're regular students. But I think they should have the option. And I don't think not all schools are going to do that. As a matter of fact, Stanford was mentioned earlier, and we actually have a visitor from Stanford today. So right before we came over, I was speaking to him, and we were talking about other stuff, but I decided I'd bring this up and said, what would Stanford do? And I'm not sure he would have all that much insight. But he was there, and he said, well, you know, for Stanford, we can probably be competitive. We're not going to pay athletes, but on the other hand, we're going to get athletes. And, you know, Stanford is a top level in virtually everything. You know, we'll get it because of the academics. So I think there'll be some that will still do that. Some programs may move away from that if they were allowed to pay athletes. I think that would still be functional.
You know, to me, I am where I am today because of the academics and athletics, and I really took it seriously. To me, the academics and athletics at the time were inextricable. And so to be able to get, I use athletics, and I love playing, but I used it to get other things I wanted in life. When you get this opportunity to play at a Division I level or any level in athletics, we have a scholarship or non-scholarship or whatever, the exposure that you get is astronomical compared to other people on campus. So if you look at it in the right way and you use it as a tool to get other things you want in life, it can be worth a fortune. And I would have to say, I'm here today and what I do today because it allowed me to get my degree and allow me to meet people not only in the sport world, but also in the academic world that helped further my career.
What doesn't kill you can only make you stronger.
Exactly right.
Thank you guys for coming in tonight. Yeah. That's all we have for this evening. We hope you helped and gained an understanding of college athletics and student athlete life. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Parker and Dr. Hoyt. Thank you for joining us tonight on Campus Voices. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL Lexington. I'm Mike Lairs.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.